Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. TikTok. The House of Representatives last Wednesday voted 352-65. You had 15 Republicans and 50 Democrats voting against the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. They want to ban TikTok. And what's interesting, about time, I was saying this about RT. Russian television here on our cable? Really? Now, I guess it's just because I'm a kid who grew up in the 70s. I grew up in the 70s, 80s. I remember the Cold War fairly vividly. And the story that I tell, because I've had a bunch of people ask me, you know, why this is such a big deal. You know, this is the end of the world. You know, they get to know what I look at. For me, and this is what I've been asking people, especially people my age and older, can you imagine what our parents would have done if our government allowed video crack to infest our minds and put there by the Soviet Union? Can you imagine what our parents' generation and grandparents' generation would have done? The reaction that would have happened, the political fallout, and even the suggestion that we allow the children, I'm not even talking about the idiot adults who are addicted to this video crack, but the children who are hooked on this and are being fed, you know, a steady diet of insanity, a steady diet of misinformation, of disinformation, of propaganda, of, hey, challenges. Let's do crazy things and put it on the TikToks. And I'm amazed that the party of Ronald Reagan, this is the part that blows my mind, that the voters, and these are red hats mostly, my Democratic friends are like, Rick, are you sure about this? And I'm going, look, I'm a liberal in the sense that I believe we should have more speech. But when you have the Communist Party, the Chinese Communist Party controlling the algorithm for this app, I'm sorry, not buying it. And I'm not buying the CEO saying, well, they've never asked us for anything. No, they never asked. They just took. Because as I understand, and again, this is where this has to be discussed, the algorithm is owned by the Chinese Communist government. Because in China, they don't feed their children the video crack that our kids get shoveled with. No, they get educational stuff. They get, you know, patriotic stuff. They get, you know, reading, writing, math. They get that. they don't get idiots doing dumb things and lying about idiotic dumb things. No, no, that's just our kids. And what's amazing to me is the adults who were supposedly against us because, you know, it's freedom of speech. I actually saw a senator say that this bill could, you know, it infringe on the First Amendment. For who? Whose First Amendment? Oh, you mean the Chinese Communist government, who is not a citizen of this country? Is that the First Amendment that it infringes on? Are you sure about that? You want to check? But no, it's going to infringe on our rights. Protect, defend the Constitution. That's what these representatives are sworn to do. And good. Look, 352 of them voted to pass this Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act. Now, let me ask you. Let's say it's not China. Let's say it's not the Communist Party of China. Let's say it's North Korea that's got a popular app. Let's say that, you know, Kim Jong-un hits big on an app. You want him to have access to your kids? And to fill the minds of the dim and the, well, impressionable with idiocy and propaganda? No, of course not. Or the Iranians or whomever. Now, all this bill says is you got to sell it off from China. You know, you want to sell it to somebody here. And I know Steve Mnuchin, always looking for a good deal. Former Treasury Secretary under Trump, looking on how they can suck this up. But very clearly, it says it. No, we're not going to allow the Chinese government to have this kind of control. And I'm still stumped, shocked, and amazed that we as Americans, as well-trained as we've been, and you hear Republicans at red hats all the time, they're communism. When actual communism comes, they have no idea what it looks like. Now, what's the Rand Pauls of the world are upset about is this is going to give the executive branch some power to force, you know, companies who are owned by foreign adversaries to either sell them or be banned. And I got to tell you, I'm all in favor of it. All in favor of giving the president, and I don't care who it is, the ability to say, no, we don't want Russian propaganda. We don't want North Korean propaganda. We don't want Iranian propaganda. We certainly don't want the Chinese Communist government having unfettered access to our airwaves. It ain't good. And when we come back, our good friend Emily De La Brea is going to be here to share some thoughts on maybe just how bad it is and maybe how deep we're in on this and maybe what we need to start thinking about doing. Back after this.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the last several days have been quite entertaining on the TikTok front. Yeah, ever since Congress, actually, you got to give them credit, massive vote in favor of not allowing a foreign adversary to have a direct pipeline into our children. I don't know. Sounds like a good idea to me. But shockingly, a lot of my red hat friends, I don't know, defending foreign corporations to own thing. It's bizarre, especially when you're talking about the fact that it's the Chinese Communist government. Let's not forget that. I'm here to share some thoughts on, is this a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Is it too late? Are we doomed? That's why I've asked our good friend Emily De La Bria to come talk with us. She's the co-founder of Horizon Advisory. You can find her work over at horizonadvisory.org. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So Congress actually came together in a really bipartisan way and said, hey, this is what we're going to do. We're going to either force a sale of this ByteDance, which is TikTok, or we're going to ban it. Is this a good idea? Is it a bad idea? Good step, bad step? Thoughts?
Great step. Super impressive. It's taken however many years to get to this point of realizing that TikTok is a problem, but this is a great step. I think the question is, what comes next? And it is a fantastic litmus test, too, for how co-opted by China, effectively, the political system is.
Now, the thing that gets me is, you know, and I was making this argument years ago about RT, Russian television, going, how is it that we have foreign adversaries who have media platforms in our country and we encourage that? I was all in favor of saying no more of that. This just seems to be that next step. In fact, I had a coworker ask me about, hey, you know, we got so many other things. Why is this important? And I said, look, you know, because we're about the same age. I said, can you have imagined our parents allowing the USSR, the Soviet Union, to have a direct line into our lives, into our bedrooms with video crack? And the answer is no, never in a million years. So why would we allow it now? See, because that's how I see it. I guess I'm getting old.
No, I think that's exactly right. It's video crack, and not just for kids. Like, if you look around, sitting in a bus or on a plane, everybody, adults included, is on their phone staring at TikTok videos. And it's, you know, brain rotting crack for Americans. It gives China access not only to like specific information, here's what's going on in your life, but also to here's how humans operate. Here's how you capture attention. Here's how you can affect behaviors or make sure that people are stuck to their screen, which is huge when it comes to AI and shaping human behaviors with AI. And finally, it lets China control the narrative. People are getting their information. They're spending hours a day on TikTok. And that's a platform where China can dial up or dial down the narratives it wants. And that's incredibly, incredibly dangerous. And it's beyond having an adversary-controlled media platform. It's beyond just sending, you know, rot into our brains. It's all of these things combined. And one more thing, the crazy thing is, in China, they have, you know, ByteDance has its like Chinese app. That app is so strictly controlled by the Chinese government. It's only allowed to promote like educational patriotic content. And you compare those two things, it's China feeding its citizens vegetables and then sending all of the most processed, poison-laced, like hormone-laced things over to the U.S.
And, you know, the thing that gets me is, you know, I've heard people, you know, trying to say, well, this is censorship and this is, we're no better than they are. And I'm going, no, this is completely different. This is dangerous. And I've been arguing TikTok was more dangerous than the others for a very long time because, the key component is the Communist Party of China. That's the problem for me. But what do you say to the person, Emily, who goes, well, you know, all the American companies are the same. They collect our data. They've got algorithms that feed us video crack. You know, why is this different?
Absolutely. And I'm not like out here to defend our, you know, tech social media environment. I'm sure it's all terrible for our brains. But it's one thing to have a private company that abides by the regulations of the United States and that is only operating in its commercial interests and that answers to, you know, its commercial players. It's one thing to have that company as a platform for information and collecting information. As you pointed out, it is absolutely different to have a Chinese Communist Party controlled entity that answers to the Chinese government and its incentives and also ultimately its rules regarding data and how that data is processed in stores. absolutely different to have that company be the one that is collecting our information and disseminating information that's going to shape our behaviors.
Now, their CEO, the CEO of ByteDance, has said that, or ByteDance America, he has said they've got Project Texas. They've spent all this money. There's firewalls. They've never gotten any information or requests for information from the Communist Party of China. All these fears are much ado about nothing.
It sounds like bullshit. I mean, you look at like any. Even look at U.S. companies, right, that operate in China. Those companies have to share their information and store their information in China. So are you really going to tell me that, like, a Chinese company doesn't have to do that? It's super easy to say that. And what we've done time after time with China is take them at their word and assume that whatever papers they, like, hand us or words they spout are reality. And time after time, that's proven not to be the case.
Now, let's say that there is a sale, because there's part of this legislation that it was passed out of the House is to force the sale of TikTok. One of the arguments I heard about this not being the great idea or the solve the problem is that the Chinese Communist Party owns the algorithm, that they own the proprietary software, so that if you're selling TikTok, you're not selling the algorithm, you're just selling, well, the app, and it's the engine. And I think one of the analogies that was used is it's like buying a Ferrari and not getting, you know, the historic engine with it. Accurate thoughts?
It's fair, and the idea of a sale of TikTok is a super complicated one because of realities like that. But the thing about information platforms and AI-enabled information platforms is that ultimately, like, the algorithms matter a lot. In most cases, these algorithms, for the record, are algorithms that Chinese players acquired from US or other foreign players. But what really sets apart those algorithms is the data fueling them. Having big data generally matters more than having the best algorithm. Even if, like, there's a difficulty with, you know, where the engine actually is, if you give that to a US company and if they actually have all the data involved in TikTok, they're going to be able to figure out how to make this company
work. They'll figure it out. The other response I've gotten, Emily, and maybe you can help me with this, because I don't actually have a really good answer for it. But, you know, I hear people say, well, you know, I don't care who's got my data. I don't care who's got my information. Everything's on the internet. It's all there. What's the difference if it's the American government, American corporations, if it's TikTok, is it the Communist Party of, you know, the Chinese Communist Party? What does it matter? They've got my information. What's the big deal?
And I think this is where it's really important to underscore two things. One is that it's not just about your information. The reason this data is valuable isn't because China's going to figure out your phone number or know what you're doing in your bedroom. The reason this information is valuable is because China is figuring out how they're collecting large scale data on human populations. And again, how they act, what they respond to. And that's feeding much, much larger capabilities that in turn give China an advantage technologically and the chance to really, like, socially engineer in an enormous, enormous way.
And look, I go back to what I said about, you know, the Soviet Union having a direct line into the youth of my generation, and what kind of power you would have given the Soviet Union if you had that direct line. This is, you know, training our children to think a very different way, and you know, be distrusting of your government. The conspiracies are just, I mean, just abound. I mean, there's a conspiracy for everything now. And it's fueling distrust in each other, in community, in our country. And I just think having, I don't know, the Communist Party having a direct line into our brains. I guess I'm just a child of the Cold War, that I think it's a bad thing.
We need to bring that thinking back, because it's also not an accident that that's what's being fueled on TikTok. And that's, like, the second point of why this is more than just them having their phone number, because they can now shape how Americans think.
So, but here's the other thing that gets me. You know, this is, it's just TikTok. You know, everyone's like, oh, it's just TikTok. The larger point here for me, Emily, is just how intertwined into the American culture the Communist Party of in China is, how much of our country they own, how many media platforms they are able to control. It's amazing how we've just kind of, because we're a capitalist country, we're a free country, we've allowed communists to come in where, I don't know, again, Cold War kid, not getting it.
And they've captured the foothold. Like, you can look at it across every different form of, like, a critical system in the U.S. ecosystem. You take supply chains, obviously. Our supply chains depend on inputs from China, basically across the board. But you can also look at, like, the U.S. political system. What big U.S. law firm or lobby firm doesn't have Chinese clients? And if they have Chinese clients, they're going to be acting according to the incentives of those Chinese clients, which are the incentives of the Chinese government. Or you look at state and local level leaders, and China has an entire strategy that's designed to co-opt, to shape the incentive of U.S. state and local level leaders to make sure that their policies align with the Chinese government. It's every single beat, and it's precisely that, because we are a free, open system, and that's perfect for China to weaponize cooperation.
Now, my mind goes, you know, so far in how bad this is. How bad is it?
It's really bad. And I think, like, one of the things, this is the most obvious form of Chinese influence, but also, you know, for that reason, probably, like, underscores how significant it is. Just if you look at national level political leadership, there's this huge change in rhetoric, right, over the past 8-10 years, where suddenly political leaders recognize that China is an adversary and we have to get serious, and that's the messaging. And it's the messaging in a bipartisan way. But then you look at what they actually do. And even those who are most vocal, even this administration, which hasn't been incredibly vocal, time and time again, leaves the waivers, leaves loopholes, leaves windows open for China. And then you get to the year before an election. And the last thing an administration in power wants is to have China tank the economy before the election. And therefore, you suddenly see a thaw in U.S.-China relations and a major loosening in the harsh policies there have been. I think all of that is because we at this point are so dependent and so co-opted on China that, you know, the most important people in the U.S. system know that if we get serious about competing, and if China doesn't want us to do something we're doing, Beijing can pull the reins and they'll be out of their jobs.
Do they have that much control? Do they have that much power in this country, do you think?
Yes. I think if China wanted to, they could say tomorrow, we're going to tank the U.S. economy. And if China said, we're going to tank the U.S. economy, Biden wouldn't get reelected. I mean, a version of that happened with COVID. We can talk in any amount of COVID, but...
You know, because my mind is going, you know, both candidates, both Biden and Trump, are talking about, you know, we got to take on China. You know, Trump, you put the tariffs on them, nothing else. There was no follow up to, you know, the performative tariffs that were there. Biden has kept those tariffs. So let me ask you this, then, if that's the reality, that they have that kind of power, shouldn't we be preparing the American people for a war type footing? Because I've been arguing we've been in a war with China for 20 some years now. We just didn't realize it. But, you know, should we not be having those conversations?
I mean, you stole the first part of my answer, which is we have been at war for decades. Yes, we should be having those conversations, because we're going to have to stomach some amount of pain if we're going to be serious about China as a threat, because they will retaliate and because they do have so much control over our system. That's absolutely necessary for the U.S. remaining intact. However, the only way that the U.S. population is going to be willing to bear with that is if it's properly messaged that we are at a war, in a war, and that's only going to remain and become even more the case. And there's a conflict underway, and that conflict will become more severe. And that messaging is necessary for any politician or even economic leader out there to actually have the guts to be serious about the competing.
No, because look, I through my mind is running all the conversations and all of the emails and all of the messages that I've gotten about, you know, how dare we ban TikTok, and I'm just amazed that the Republican Party, the party of Ronald Reagan, seems to be a wholly owned subsidiary of the Chinese Communist Party, because they're defending them at every opportunity, or at least the voters are. And that's the part I'm struggling with. So if they're losing their mind over this, over an app that most of them don't even use, I can't imagine what talking about, hey, we're kind of in an economic war here and have been for a very long time. And you might have to actually sacrifice. I have no idea where that takes us.
Yes. On the other hand, I do think there's a point where people are fed up. I think there's been more of a recognition of the threat China poses and also the degree to which China's trying to take over the United States. And if you look even in terms of Chinese investment and the concerns that stoke at local level, I do think that suggests that there's something there. Like there is a realization and there is a frustration. And if that can actually be messaged to, and there can be a sense that we're not responding in the weird abstract, here's what DC wants nonsense, but the reality is like, here's a country that's threatening our country and threatening American livelihoods and American jobs and American ways of life. And we're responding to the grassroots, local level fears, anxieties and frustrations with that. Then I think that's something that could actually work.
And how do we get to that? I mean, how do we begin messaging around what you've just laid out is the reality that, as I understand it, but the average American doesn't. I mean, you know, as long as we go get up, we go to work, we buy our cheap garbage from China at Walmart, and you know, we've been kind of slow walking. Well, we're happy. How do we fix that?
I think it has to be a conversation, like a combination of messaging and concrete policies that are making that reality clear. And actually, I think like the IRA is a good place to start. The IRA currently doesn't have provisions that prevent IRA incentives from going to Chinese companies. That's not something you do in a wartime situation. That's not something you do against an adversary. If the US government can say, hey, we're in a real conflict with China, they're our adversary and we need to invest domestically so that we have capacity actually to compete. Oh, wait, also, here's a concrete policy, the IRA, that's investing in domestic capability, industrial capability for an industrial competition and protecting that from China. That's the kind of thing I think that actually works.
Isn't that part of it, though? Isn't that the Buy American provision that Biden talks about all the time?
They talk about it all the time. If you actually look at, there's a small amount of domestic content requirements in the IRA. However, there's nothing in it that stops Chinese companies that investing in the US and receiving tax incentives for doing that. So for example, if you look at like the solar projects that are currently being supported by the IRA, half of them involve Chinese companies.
But again, I think this comes back to us, doesn't it? Ultimately, and this is kind of where I want to wrap this up. I mean, the reality is we've got to wake up to the reality of what is, and what is the Communist Party has their tentacles right here in our backyard, and that we've got to get active in doing something about it. It comes back to politics, I think. So, you know, how do we move in that direction, or do you see a different way here?
I mean, it obviously a huge part of it is politics. There's also a part of it that's the US industrial and economic system. And you know, investing in a way that's competitive against China from the private sector. And also like from the personal perspective, obviously making decisions that are pro-America, not pro-China. The problem is that both of those, the industrial and economic actors making decisions and the consumers making decisions are driven by market incentives, and market incentives are shaped by the government and the government is shaped by politics. So we can be patriotic in our individual, our economic and industrial choices, but the large scale reality on that is going to be driven by Washington being serious.
I got to tell you, this is while we're just beginning talking about TikTok, it is so much worse. And I'm sure this is something that we will talk about in the coming weeks and months as the election rolls around. But Emily, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Scary. I usually say good stuff. I'm not. This is kind of scary stuff here, but I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Good stuff, Emily De La Brea. She is the co-founder of the Horizon Advisory. Check out their website, horizonadvisory.org. We will get links out on social media. You can take a look at that. I want to hear your thoughts. Should we be banning TikTok, or are we okay mainlining video crack right into the brains of our children? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So the question is, really, honestly, truthfully, is America ready for an economic Cold War? I know, look, when I grew up, it was all about mutual assured destruction. Bombs were coming, nuclear winter. I was going to dive under your school desks because somehow that was going to save us. But this is an economic Cold War, and we've been in it for a very long time. And the question I have is, are we ready for it? Or is it that our insatiable appetite for more cheap junk from China is just too powerful to overcome? And look, I look at this debate over TikTok, which is a very small issue in the grand scheme of things. But it's interesting to hear the voices, especially those wearing the red hats and then on the right defending TikTok and, well, moreover, corporate supremacy. And here to share some thoughts on, are we ready? And maybe how do we get ready? I've asked our good friend Scott Paul to come talk with us. Scott is the president of the Alliance for American Manufacturing, AmericanManufacturing.org, their website. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, great to be with you.
So, you know, I'm looking at this TikTok thing, which I got to tell you is just shocking to me. The response that I'm seeing, especially when you talk about, you know, the idea of having the Chinese Communist government having a direct main line to our children's brain with what I've been calling video crack, and people defending it. I guess I'm just stumbled at this moment on how we got here.
Yeah, it's a bit mystifying to me, and I love the way you set it up because we are men of a certain age, and we do remember the last Cold War. But, I mean, to be honest, there were no economic, like, you know, preconditions for that, right? I mean, there just wasn't trade with the Soviet Union. So it didn't, and we certainly didn't have apps and all of that stuff. So it's a lot different now. And I think that part of it is that folks have been lulled to sleep for a couple of decades about, like, you know what? Everything with China is fine, and it's going to get better. And yeah, even though there might be some economic casualties along the way, they'll have this march towards openness and democracy, and they'll be friends of ours forever. And that was, I think that's how people have been conditioned to think. Now, if you have read any intelligence or classified information, or if you've been in the economic trenches on this, or if you've been paying any amount of attention to what Xi Jinping has been doing within China or outside of China, you would know that's not the case at all. And that a tool like TikTok, with the, you know, hundreds of millions of folks who are hooked on it, basically, you know, there is a credible danger there. And the thing that gets me, even if you're a skeptic about this, is that the folks who are on the House and Senate intelligence committees, the ones who receive the classified briefings, they are the most concerned about the threat that TikTok presents. And so what I have a hard time understanding is, like, how are these, you know, purveyors of information on the social media any more, how are they more informed somehow then really bright bipartisan group of senators and House members who are on the Intelligence Committee, who have been studying TikTok for a long time and its threat. And as you point out, you know, it's the main folks who utilize TikTok are at a very vulnerable age. Their brains aren't fully developed. And they get hooked on the content, and they have ups and downs with it. And we've seen, if TikTok doesn't like something, what it tries to do to mobilize the opposition against it. And then just the final point I'll make is that, and then there's the question is like, does it really answer to China or not? And the answer is it absolutely does answer to China. There's no question about it. And TikTok has acknowledged in the past that it has gotten information on journalists that have been concerned about its impact. And so, you know, the danger of weaponization is very real. And I know we'll get to other points about this, like reciprocity or the fact that none of our social media companies have that access, or even that TikTok itself, in the form that it's in the United States, isn't allowed in China.
Right.
So that should tell you something, too. But, man, there's so many reasons that I just wish there was a little more logic in this conversation.
No, but the bigger point to this, and I got to tell you, I'm surprised at the number of voices who are defending corporate supremacy. This idea is, how can the U.S. government tell a company that they can't operate here? And that seems to be, you know, burnt into the minds of some in our society, that corporations are sacrosanct and we can do nothing to regulate them or hold them accountable, or in this case, ban them because they're bad for, you know, you name it. That's the part that really gets me. I get you're going to get a couple of users and, no, I really like my TikTok, but the fact that, you know, a large number of people that I've come in contact with, well, this is a slippery slope. If we open this door, we'll start banning corporations and we're going to be communist, which is weird.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's take a big step back here, because that argument is absurd. I know we have to deal with it, but like, there is a long history of requirements when it comes to the nationality of owners of broadcast networks in the United States. And so before Fox could gain a foothold in the United States, Rupert Murdoch had to become an American citizen. He wasn't. He was Australian.
Right.
He had to become an American citizen. And that was the condition, basically, of him operating Fox in the United States, because that is a requirement. We don't want a foreign national operating a broadcast network in the United States, for a very good reason. So arguably TikTok has a larger reach than Fox does. And the thing about even what the Congress is trying to do here is it's saying, you know what, you guys want your TikTok, you know, go ahead, you can have it. It just needs to have a different type of ownership right now,
right,
than it does. And it has to have a divestiture. But yeah, people don't understand what's happening in China, what's happening to our companies in China, and what it's like for them, which is really, really, really mild compared to what's being suggested by the House Representatives, right?
Yeah,
now.
And I don't even think it's going to pass. I think it's just, I think it's almost a messaging bill, but, you know, it's inflamed a lot of people. But you bring up an interesting thing about how we're treated, or U.S. companies are treated in China, and, you know, how any of us would be. I think a lot of people think, well, they're just like us. They, and the number of people are, well, you know, our government's just as bad, was, I got to tell you, on a certain level, mind-blowing. And something that I never thought I would hear, that we're just as bad as the communists.
Yeah. 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 Look, no one is perfect. Let's be very clear about this. We do not have a perfect system. We should continue to try to make sure it's very good and strive for perfection. Okay. But that said, it is not a fair comparison to say that we're being like China or like Russia or something like that. That is just not the case at all. If you're a critic Putin, you die.
Right.
If you're a critic of Xi, you're in prison. If you post something on social media about either of those guys, you're also done. So, but here in the United States, for better or for worse, you're allowed to say almost anything you want on social media.
Yeah, look at TikTok. There's a lot of craziness there. And the thing is, because I've had a number of conversations with people who really like TikTok and are involved in it, but understand that it's a lot of conspiracy theory, well done, high level of propaganda, well done, well funded. These folks find it entertaining because they see it as satire. But the sad reality is there are a lot of people who are taking this content as, God's honest gospel truth, which is where you get a lot of these really bizarre conspiracy theories that are bubbling up all over the place.
You're right. You're right. I mean, I don't pretend to understand the algorithm that's utilized. I don't have TikTok. I don't ever intend to, but it is it can be weaponized in that respect. And there is a lot of stuff on there that is not grounded in reality or fact checked. And there's also some evidence that when there are conversations that might make the Chinese Communist Party uncomfortable, say about the Uyghur genocide or like that, there's some evidence that gets suppressed as well. And so there you have it. And again, to everybody who loves TikTok and wants to keep it, there is a path to do that. And again, there's a precedent to doing that. Rupert Murdoch changed his citizenship so that he could operate Fox in the United States of America. So if people want TikTok, let's find an American buyer for it. It's that simple. And seems like there's a bunch of folks who are interested in doing it.
Yeah, but what do you say to the person? And there's a New York Times article that I was looking at that said, why do you want TikTok if you don't get the algorithm, which is owned by the Chinese Communist Party? It's like getting a Ferrari and not the engine, which is kind of what this is. And shouldn't we be having a conversation about these algorithms that keep, basically mainline force feeding what is visual crack into our veins or into our eyeballs? Because I know a lot of people who think, well, it's just what's popular, what people are looking at. No, it's what's being spoon fed to you because they know what you're looking at and what you want to, what they think you want to see, and they just keep feeding you a steady diet of the outrage candy and the bizarre.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, look, that has to be a broader conversation too. And I will say it is not just TikTok to that, but TikTok has scale. And TikTok not only has scale, but it engages you folks who are on it for a longer period of time than any of its social media cousins. And so there is reason to be very, very concerned about that. And again, it's not like it's fact-checked or anything like that. And so there is, it obviously can be weaponized. Yeah. And we've seen that. So what worries me is that this is just social media. We're also seeing Chinese companies doing this with online shopping. You have companies called Shein and Temu that have come in and completely disrupted online shopping. I worry a lot about if Chinese autos arrive on our shores and people are like, why shouldn't I be able to pay $12,000 or $10,000 for an automobile? Even though it's made in China, times are tough. Why shouldn't I be able to do that? And there are a lot of reasons why that should not be the case, because there is not that sort of reciprocity and that's not a real price. And there's all sorts of other reasons. But this is, as you point out, this is the tip of the iceberg, right? I mean, this is very visible because it's on social media. But this is the tip of the iceberg about what we're facing in the years ahead.
Exactly. No, look, I grew up, the U.S. had always been the manufacturer of the world. I mean, I always reference that bridge in Trenton, New Jersey that says, Trenton makes, the world takes, which was the motto of this country for a very long time. And we've lost that. We didn't lose it. We know where it is. We gave it away to China and built them up very quickly to where, I just saw something earlier today that said since the end of 2019, Chinese manufacturing, already the largest in the world, expanded by over a quarter, more, yeah. which means they're getting bigger, they're getting stronger, they're manufacturing more, and they're dumping more. They were talking about their ability to make cars, and it's evidently Chinese factories can make something like 40 million cars a year, and yet domestic consumption only is 15 million. Where do those other 25 million cars go? Well, where you're talking about here, just to keep the lights on.
Bingo. Yeah, you got it. It's like their model of economic development is entirely different than the U.S. model, which is much more balanced. And in fact, we don't have enough of an industrial policy. China is a mercantilist country in the classic sense, is that it underconsumes at home. It makes too much stuff, way too much stuff. And then it sells it abroad at a price that disrupts everything globally, puts other companies out of business, and then they come marching in and take over the market. We've seen that in garments. We've seen that in textiles. We've seen that in microelectronics. We've seen that in cheap plastic stuff. We've seen that in a lot of different categories, and they're just moving up the value chain. And pretty soon, it'll be autos and it'll be airplanes. We've seen it with online shopping. We've seen it with social media. So we do have to be careful and manage this, because this is not the free market at work. I mean, to your point, it's been manipulated, and it is a product that people are going to want, but they are not going to think about what the consequences are in the broader sense for our country, for our national security, for our economic security, for our mental health, for all sorts of different reasons. But, we do have to be firm about this. And it's gonna involve a lot of arguments, unfortunately, a lot of difficult conversations. But these are conversations that we've postponed for way too long.
Yeah. No, it brings me back to the question I've asked for years now, and I've asked you before, and I've asked others, what are we? Are we consumers first, or are we workers first? And this is that scenario. Do we want cheap, or do we want jobs? Because there doesn't seem to be a way to balance that, given the dynamics we have with China. If we had a balancing mechanism, which now finally some people are talking about, maybe we need a balancing network, because China is going to dominate the globe manufacturing wise, which is not good for anyone's national security. But I don't think we're ready for it.
Right. And all we're trying to do, and obviously the previous administration did some tariffs. This administration has had both those tariffs and investments here. We're trying to build up our own manufacturing base again. And people are like, oh, that's industrial policy. We're not even close to that. I mean, we don't make enough for our own selves right now. We're still working on that. We're still getting up to that point. And so to your point, is that what China does, the scale that it has now, if it sneezes economically, it's going to wipe out towns in the Midwest that have factories. And that's what the problem is. So we have, TikTok is a serious issue for a lot of different reasons, but this broader issue of unfair competition from Chinese companies is something that we still have to pay a lot of attention to, because there's a lot at stake here.
So last question that I've got for you, because look, I'm just a commentator. I'm just looking at this and have been for a very long time, trying to sound the alarm that, hey, things are not good. How do we prepare the American people for what eventually is going to come? Look, eventually we're going to realize that we're in an economic war, and not because we just woke up one day, but because, as you pointed out, if they sneeze, the Midwest goes under. We have mass chaos. How do we begin to prepare the American people for what is reality? Because we don't seem to be there yet.
Yeah. Look, nothing comes without a cost, okay? It just doesn't. And if there was an easy way to do this, we would have discovered it by now. But it will involve, and one thing that we're trying to do with these investments is build up capacity in the United States. Ultimately, that will drive down costs, and people will have more choice. It'll be closer to home. And once we get the scale and the innovation and the productivity, that will drive costs down. But as we're trying to do that, there may be some disruptions that cause some temporary price increases. But I will be quick to say, Rick, that American consumers who are buying Chinese products haven't paid a fair price for those ever, ever. I mean, it's been a subsidized price. It's been a price that's built on the back of forced labor and environmental exploitation. And if consumers knew the real cost of the goods that they were purchasing, I think they would think a little bit differently about how all that plays off and be a little more willing to understand that for some temporary, you might buy a little less, it might last a little longer, and ultimately you're going to be better off for that. That's a mindset that, you know, we're gonna have to encourage folks to adopt.
No, societally, we've got to have I hate to use the word re-education, but because we've been educated, you know, hey, better living through lower prices, Scott, Walmart. You know, we've been trained with these slogans to think, hey, cheap is good. And because we're getting cheap because of China. Thank you, China. Although we've given all away of our jobs, we've given away the future of our children. But hey, right now we got the fix.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, sorry, Rick.
No, I'm just, yeah. We got a lot of work to do on this, Scott. But as always, I appreciate you taking time for us, sharing your expertise. I look forward to having you back again real soon.
I appreciate it, Rick. Thanks so much for having me on.
Our good friend, Scott Paul. I want to hear your thoughts. Do you get it? Are we there? Do you think the American people are capable in this moment to coming together, maybe under the flag of patriotism, waving the flag to say, hey, we should reshore manufacturing for the good of our national security, since that's all we ever seem to think about when we do this? I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Back after this. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. This day in labor history, the year was 1854. That was the day that the founders of what became the Republican Party met in Ripon, Wisconsin. The idea was to form a new party opposed to the Southern labor system based on slavery. That July, the Republicans held their first convention in Michigan. Their motto became free soil, free labor, free men. But as historian Eric Foner has explained, proclaiming the superiority of free labor was easy. Implementing that vision proved more troublesome. Women and free black residents living in the North often found it difficult, if not impossible, to find safe, good-paying jobs in the so-called free labor system. 2 years after the new party was founded, Republicans ran their first presidential candidate, John C. Fremont. Fremont was a military man, explorer, and map maker of the American West. He carried 11 northern states, but failed to win the presidency. The next election, Republicans nominated Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln won 18 northern states, and for the first time, a Republican sat in the White House. With the victory of a free labor candidate, the country stood on the brink of civil war. The question of slave labor would be settled on the battlefield. In his first address to Congress, President Lincoln declared, "Labor is prior to and independent of capital. Capital is only the fruit of labor and could have never existed if labor had not first existed. Labor is the superior of capital and deserves much the higher consideration." Given the thoughts of the first Republican president, could you imagine a leader in the Republican Party making such a statement today?
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, look, I'm serious about this. I think we have been, for a very long time, and I've said this before, we are in an economic war with the Communist Party of China. That's been going on for a long time. The difference here is we had a bunch of greed monsters who sold us this idea. No, if we trade with them, if we make them like us, the sad reality is they're making us like them. And I don't know that we're ready to have the real kind of conversations that come with what's it going to look like undoing the damage that has been done over the last 30, 40 years. How do we rebuild our manufacturing prowess to where we We produce what we need. And I say this a lot. Domestic production for domestic consumption. The fact that China has the capacity right now to build 40 million automobiles a year, and yet domestically they can only consume 15 million of them, means that they're overproducing in a big, big way. And that means that where are they going to send them? Well, they're going to send them to the places that have auto industries, like the US, like the UK, and they're going to destroy it. That's the plan. Always been the plan. For instance, the steelworkers right now and a couple of other unions have petitioned the office of the U.S. Trade Representative, Catherine Tai, saying, look, China's shipbuilding industry for the last 20 years has had a deliberate strategy to dominate global shipbuilding. They've been heavily subsidizing it to where they're selling ships and building them for cheaper than other people can buy the material. You can't compete like this. And the goal is to dominate the market, crush everybody else. And then once you have control of the market, once it's all yours, jack up the prices. That's the goal. That's always been the goal. It's a good capitalist model. The problem is the communists have gone, hey, wait a second. Those idiots over there, those capitalists, those greedy capitalists, are going to give us access to their markets without reciprocity, without having equal and fair access. No, we're going to argue that, well, we need time to build. And what they've done is they have taken our manufacturing base. And I know, Rick, you're xenophobic. No, I'm a guy who says, look, we should be building stuff for domestic consumption. We should be building what we need. Everybody should be doing that. And the things that we trade are the things that we cannot. Let me emphasize that again. The things that we trade are the things that we cannot build. We don't have the capacity to build, which I would argue is very little. But I fear any president, because, you know, my inclination is, you know, President Biden to come out and say, look, national security, we wave the flag, because we only do things in this country under the guise of the military. You know, school lunch programs didn't happen until, you know, we need soldiers to carry guns. And they got milk programs in the schools. But under the guise of national security, because they can make 40 million cars in a year. Do you think they can ramp up military production if we need to start shooting people? I know. But Rick, we've got nukes. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah. Is that the answer? I think back to the arsenal of democracy. The carry a big stick, walk silently. Remember that guy? I think back to that and go, heavy manufacturing, the ability to ramp up production. That's a big stick. And sadly, we've given it away. We didn't lose it. We know exactly where it is. The greedy capitalists in our country, the shareholder class, the ownership class, they sold us out for more for them and, well, screw jobs for us. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Miss any portion of the program, grab the podcast. As always, thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. At rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.